I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking all this hour about major weather events like Harvey, which has left communities all along the Western Gulf Coast devastated with flooding. We talked earlier about the 2014 floods here in Metro Detroit that caused major damage to homes and property. We could list one major weather event after another going back several years that all seemed bigger and worse than the one before it. It's hard not to wonder how much climate change has to do with the frequency and the intensity of these storms and the destruction they are leaving behind. Is there any way to figure out what effect global climate change has on these events? What does it mean for the future if that trend continues to get worse and the storms get bigger and stronger? Joining us now to talk about that is Dave Rosenthal. He is the managing editor of Great Lakes Today, a collaboration of public media stations that is led by WBFO Buffalo, where he is based. Dave, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for having me on the show.
And in a little bit, we'll be joined by Rob Meyer, who is the associate editor of The Atlantic, which recently wrote about how climate change intensifies storms like Harvey. And of course, we want to hear from you. What do you think about the role that climate change is playing here? Is that the reason we're seeing more intense storms? Think about the storms we have here in Southeast Michigan. This summer was a really great example of that. The frequency of the storms, the amount of lightning that we see from those storms, the amount of rain that falls from the skies. Do you think that climate change is one of the things that's driving that? 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put your comments there, or you could go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll work you into the conversation. Dave Rosenthal, let's start with the big question put to you. Is this about climate change? And if it is, how do we prove that?
I think there's pretty wide agreement that their climate change is one of the biggest impacts is frequency of storms and the intensity of storms. And it has a lot of implications for the Great Lakes. I'll give you two right off the top. One is that, as one of your previous guests talked about at the top of the show, there's a lot of old sewage treatment facilities around the Great Lakes in cities like Detroit, Buffalo, Cleveland. All these cities that grew up years ago have these old infrastructure. And in a lot of these cities, almost all the cities basically, when a big storm occurs, the stormwater mixes in the same pipes with the sewage that's coming out of homes and businesses. Right. And when a big storm occurs, the sewage treatment plants can't handle all the water. So what happens is millions of gallons of untreated sewage or lightly treated sewage runs into the lakes. In Detroit, for example, in this summer, there was one rainstorm in which 7 million gallons went right into the rivers around the city, another one where 6 million gallons went in, another where 3 million gallons went in. So it happens a lot. It's not just something that happens just once a year. This is something that happens three or four times or five times in a summer month. So that's a huge problem sure. All around Detroit and all around the big cities in the Great Lakes region. A related problem is that when you have big storms, it can take a lot of the fertilizer and push it off fields into the streams and rivers that connect to the Great Lakes. So you have a lot of this fertilizer running off and contributing to toxic algae blooms, especially in Lake Erie, the western part of Lake Erie, which hits on Ohio, a little bit of Pennsylvania possibly, but mainly Ohio, Michigan are affected by that. So those are two really big problems brought about by these intense storms. And as the frequency increases, the problems are going to get worse.
Rob Meyer is now with us. He's the associate editor of The Atlantic. Recently wrote about how climate change intensifies storms like Harvey. In your article, Rob, you talk about how man-made climate change can't account for any one particular storm, but it's attributable to the intensity and duration of these storms. Talk about how that works and what we're seeing that proves that to be true. Rob, are you there? Oh, there you go.
Me?
Yep, we got you now.
Am I here?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Did you hear my? You heard my question, right?
Yeah, exactly. I did.
Okay.
So, as you said, you know, you get a climate scientist on the phone and you ask them about an individual weather event, and they'll always start saying, "Well, you know, the climate is the sum of all weather events. We can't talk about one individual weather event specifically yet." Although some teams of climate scientists are getting very good at kind of identifying whether a heat wave might have happened in a kind of a normal climate, a non-warmed climate. We're not quite there on hurricanes yet, but we can say that certain aspects of what Harvey did and certain ways that Harvey acted sure seem to reflect symptoms of climate change. And so while we can't say that Harvey was definitely a different storm, we can say that there are ideas that climate scientists have written about for years that then were reflected in Harvey. And so one of them is the fact that it intensified so quickly. And so between Wednesday night of last week and Friday night when it made landfall, it intensified from being a tropical storm to being a Category 4 hurricane. And that was actually like both much faster and much more stronger intensification than was expected. It was only expected to maybe reach Category 3. And that's because as it progressed toward land, you know, normally hurricanes, they're quite windy. So hurricanes feed on warm sea surface temperatures. And normally they're quite windy and they churn up a lot of the ocean as they get stronger. And that actually kind of dampens them because as they move the ocean, they bring up colder water from the bottom or from deeper below. And that kind of serves to dampen their strength. But as Harvey strengthened, did churn up water from 100 or 200 meters down beneath the sea surface, but that water was also warm. It was also unusually warm. In fact, the Gulf of Mexico was one of the hottest places in the ocean. Specifically, the place where Harvey was one of the warmest places in the entire kind of global ocean at the moment when Harvey was intensifying. And that made it so that Harvey could continue to strengthen and continue to intensify, and there was no kind of natural damper on its strength. And so it intensified up until the moment of landfall. And in fact, I think in the last 30 years, there hasn't been a hurricane west of Florida that intensified up until the moment of landfall like Harvey did. So so that's one way, that's one big way that it reflects this, what we would talk about as like a very traditional kind of climate hurricane signal.
Sure. It's very different. Talk about, I want both of you to talk about the destruction of wetlands and the role that they play. We see some of that here in the Great Lakes, and of course, I have seen maps in the last couple of days of Houston over time. The amount of pavement, for instance, was one of the maps that I saw between, I think, 10 years ago and now. Really, really big difference. Dave Rosenthal, talk about what we're doing with wetlands here all along the Great Lakes.
Well, we don't have a very good record along the Great Lakes of protecting wetlands in the past. You know, a lot of industry was built up along the shore of the lakes. They didn't really care much about preserving wetlands. It was more to take in water and use in their manufacturing processes. So a lot of it was industrialized. A lot of it, if it wasn't industry, there were a lot of hard barriers along the water. But in recent years, there's been a lot of movement to try and restore these wetlands, thanks to things like the senator talked about, the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. A lot of money goes into getting rid of these hard barriers like break walls and restoring a more natural wetlands, a more natural shoreland. So I think there's a lot of good work being done right now to bring the wetlands back to what they used to be before industry sort of took over all the shoreline of the lakes.
Yeah, Rob Meyer, that map that I referred to about pavement in Houston, I think is just probably one indicator of how development in that region has not accelerated storms or made them more intense, but has made sort of nature's way of dealing with those storms, it sort of crippled that, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's funny. There's a study coming out tomorrow that I will not give away too much about, but it finds that wetlands prevented a ton of flooding damage in Sandy, during Superstorm Sandy. And that's absolutely right about development in Houston. I mean, one of the most striking facts about how the flooding has happened and now why some houses in Houston will be underwater for another 2 to 3 months is because there are big dry reservoirs in Houston that normally look like parks, kind of normally look like these are the giant version of runoff ditches near the highway. But they are designed to hold water and to, you know, hold storm water after a large storm. And there are houses in them. Like, people were allowed to build houses and businesses within these dry reservoirs, kind of on the border of the natural parks and stuff. And so, I mean, there's neighborhoods there. And so that's one reason why I think this storm will be hearing about it for so long, and why it's been, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it's been so devastating, but its duration will be especially long because there's just development in places where water is literally designed to go and be held after a storm like this. You know, people have houses there. And that's one example of how Houston's kind of very permissive land use policies have backfired, at least in this one case.
Right. Right. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. My guests are Rob Meyer. He's an associate editor at The Atlantic. Recently wrote about how climate change intensifies storms like Hurricane Harvey. Also with us is Dave Rosenthal. He's the managing editor of Great Lakes Today, a collaboration of public media stations that's led by WBFO Buffalo, where he is based. We're talking about climate change and the effect it has on things like Hurricane Harvey. Is that one of the drivers behind these really intense storms that we see in Houston, the intense storms that we see around the Great Lakes? Think about Southeast Michigan and other places that enjoy the lakes and thrive really from their proximity to the lakes, but increasingly are vulnerable to the volatile weather that comes off of those lakes. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put your comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we will try to work you into the conversation. Dave Rosenthal, I want to ask about the lake levels here on the Great Lakes. Are climate scientists concerned about those levels getting too high? I remember a few years ago, they were at record lows. They're back, I think, to their normal levels, but they're back in a really quick period of time, which might speak to the idea that we'll deal with levels that are too high in not too long. Where are scientists' heads about that issue?
Well, the biggest problem this year is on Lake Ontario, which, you know, the easternmost Great Lake, where they've had flooding since the spring, and the shore of Lake Ontario in New York State and in Toronto area, a lot of these parts are still flooded months later, partly because heavy spring rainfalls just swelled Lake Ontario, and a dam that helps to regulate the level of the lake couldn't release too much water because you'd wind up flooding Montreal, which lies downstream on the St. Lawrence. So that's one lake that flooding has been horrible this year. It's been also flooded in isolated areas of some other lakes, but this shows you how devastating the high levels can be. I did want to mention and sort of piggyback on what Rob had said earlier about storms, and this doesn't really apply to Houston at all, but it'll be relevant in a few months to the Great Lakes, and that is the warming of the Great Lakes. You know, in addition to water levels, scientists are really concerned about the warming. And that's a problem because if you don't have much ice cover on the lakes, like as we did last winter and the winter before, it creates lots of problems. You can have these huge snowstorms, lake effect snowstorms, when the wind comes across from Canada, picks up a lot of moisture from the open lake as opposed to an iced over lake and just dumps it on the shore of, the eastern end of Lake Michigan or the southern end of Lake Erie and the southern end of Lake Ontario. And so you can get storms with, 70 inches of snow as we had last year in New York State. And I think that's going to be a real problem when you talk about increased number of storms. It's not just rainstorms, but it's also this horrible, winter weather that we can see in the future.
Yeah. And so earlier in the conversation, I talked about how along the Detroit River, for instance, we don't generally worry about flooding. There's some flooding, I believe, off Lake St. Clair, which connects in to the river, but I can't ever remember the river itself posing that threat. Is that something that in the future or the near future we'll have to be concerned with?
Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with that river to know how it's built along the sides to control the flooding, but certainly all, the water from the Lake Superior flows down eventually to Detroit and passes Detroit on its way out. So they're, all the lakes are connected. So if the lakes are rising, that would mean that the river is going to be rising too eventually. And it is something I think they would have to be concerned with to make sure that their flood control measures are up to date and ready to take on, bigger storms, higher lake levels, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a quick call here before we end. Adele in Dearborn, welcome to Detroit Today. Adele, I've got about a minute left, but I wanted to get you on.
All right. First off, climate change is absolutely related to these increased storms we're experiencing. And one of the drivers behind climate change is capitalism and the relentless drive for profit to refine as many fossil fuels as possible while they're still profitable.
Sure.
I wanted to harken back to your discussion about Hurricane Harvey. There's no private market for flood insurance because it's not profitable.
Right.
Capitalism cannot and will not serve our basic human needs.
Okay, Adele, thanks very much for the comment. If Rob or Dave, if you have a quick thought about flood insurance and the difficulty that people have getting it, we've got about 20 seconds left.
Well, I think the flood insurance program is this interesting example of where Congress decided that we should, share the risk of having building houses on the coastline, and that risk should be socialized to the public government. I think as we go forward, it's not clear that the government, that Congress from any part of the country except on the coast will want to continue to make that investment.
Okay. Rob Meyer.
Interesting example of socialized risk.
Rob Meyer, Associate Editor of The Atlantic. Dave Rosenthal, Managing Editor of Great Lakes Today. Thanks for being here on Detroit Today.
Thank
you. That's
going
to do it for me. I'll be back tomorrow. Hope you will too. This is 101.9 WDET, Detroit's public radio station. See you tomorrow.